afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and we have a cracking program set for today. Joining me on the panel this week is the always colourful John Perry. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Simon. I'd like to wish all our veterans happy Memorial Day today, and just remind everyone, if you see someone in uniform, buy them lunch if you get a chance, and thank them for their contributions and sacrifices.
Also from the West Coast, we have well-known attorney Peter Haven. Peter, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much, Simon, and a happy Memorial Day to everyone.
And, of course, no program would be complete without, you know, some commentary from the center of the universe, Youngstown, Ohio. We have roustabout Sam Moffey. Sam, great to have you on the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Happy Memorial Day to everybody. And Simon, looking forward to a great show. Peter, looking forward to a great show. John, looking forward to cracking heads with you.
Hey, Sam, speaking of that, is it the center of the universe or the armpit?
No, actually, it's the asshole of the universe.
Well, either way, it's the center of something. Either way, it's the center of something.
And we're waiting for the enema that Simon's going to give us to clean us out.
He's going to give you an enya.
The enya.
Enema.
Okay. Let's kick off the program with the IRS story. As I read it, they targeted some right-wing groups, particularly Tea Party folks, who were seeking tax-exempt status. Peter, I don't view you as a tax or IRS expert, but you probably know more about it than I do. The news has been full of conflicting stories. One school of thought is that the tax exemption status is for non-profits, particularly true with a 501c3. Even with the 501c4, there are some issues, right? You have to specifically talk about social welfare. I'd like to know how the Tea Party groups, you know, can be seen as performing social welfare. I'd like your thoughts.
Well, it's not just that they have to be nonprofit or social welfare groups, but these entities seeking tax exempt status, their primary focus, and that's the statutory language, their primary focus is not supposed to be a political agenda. So 501c4 was created to allow nonprofit social welfare groups who happen to overlap into political activities to apply for tax-exempt status. But it's not intended for any group whose primary focus is a political or partisan agenda. So it's not clear to me what if anything has gone wrong here. If groups from whatever affiliation they are applying for tax exempt status, somebody's got to make a determination about whether or not these groups, their primary focus is politics or not, and somebody's got to ask questions and undertake some level of inquiry. So I'm not convinced that anything improper has taken place.
Okay, I can't resist this. I've got to ask John. John, you, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I would say, as usual, Peter's out in left field. Apparently, he had no problem with the George Soros umbrella organizations like Center for American Progress, Tides Foundation, Media Matters, Planned Parenthood, Acorn, which Obama worked for, even unions. They're all politically dominated, and they call it education as far as getting their message out. So all organizations do that, and it's a way of organizing, which we have a community organizer in the White House. So there's a long history of this. And now that conservatives are getting involved in it and challenging the liberal groups who have had probably a 20 to 30 year head start, now people like Peter are saying, oh, no, this is political. And it's no surprise to me. That's the war liberals are fighting to suppress the vote.
I think that's a load of bullshit, but, you know, I think that the whole, you know, 501c program was really designed for truly non-profits. Yeah, a local group that, you know, wants to collect money to, yeah, help the community, and, you know, without, taking a huge amount of the money for themselves. But, you know, clearly the Tea Party isn't about, you know, helping anyone. Yeah, they're just about making commercials. So where's the, you know, how could they have even, you know, been considered to be a non-profit? Ah, John goes quiet.
I don't think they are, and I don't think that, you know, I don't understand the comparison with Planned Parenthood, but I don't think they are. I don't think political activities should be entitled to participate in nonprofit status under the IRS code. I mean, I don't know how to say it.
And Sam, you've been quiet.
Well, I'm listening to Peter brought this point up last Sunday, and I think it's a good point. Is that, you know, how much political activities can these quote unquote nonprofits do, whether they're from the left or from the right? And that's what the snooping agents and the people all falling by the wayside and tripping over themselves not to remember what they did or what they didn't do were saying they were doing. That they wanted to extra scrutiny the Tea Party because they might be spending too much time on politics and not on this other stuff. I think the whole question of 501ccs and all, there's too many nonprofits out there. There's just too many of them, and they're really for-profit for themselves. And I think we've all seen all these and heard of all these abuses that these quote-unquote nonprofits get. And I think that's even a bigger issue as far as I'm concerned. We have nonprofit real estate development corporations in Ohio that it's incredible the amount of money they get and what they're allowed to do with it, yet they're a nonprofit. And the heads of these agencies, and it's all taxpayer money, you know, maybe $200,000 a year, but they're not accountable to anybody. And they don't have to deal with the sunshine laws and all that sort of stuff. But that stuff aside, this is as political as it gets. And it started with Herbert Hoover, was the first one who started to use the IRS to punish his political enemies. And Barack Obama, he's now handed the ball off, you know, through the years, through the presidents, through the to Obama. And this is the way of punishing your enemy. John, I'm with you on this one. These guys did not do this on their own. They were told to do it, and they did it. And how far it goes up, we're going to find out. But I tell you something. When I see Shulman, the ex, even though he was appointed by Bush, and it was a political deal that they had to do, in order to get Max Baucus, the Democratic senator from Montana, to agree to something for the Butch, whatever the Butchers wanted done, they had to put the Shulman in at the head of the IRS. So he's a Democrat who was a Butch appointment, But when he was being grilled by an Ohio judge, Representative Jim Jordan from Ohio, and he said, how many times have you been to the White House in the last year? And it was 118 times. And he couldn't remember anything he was there for, except he was there for the Easter egg hunt. I leave you with this, gentlemen. The guy's Jewish. What's he doing at the Easter egg hunt?
Looking for money.
Okay, Peter, a quick question for you, and it's probably a very unfair question. Do you have a simple definition of the difference between a 501c3 and a 501c4?
In my understanding, is both organizations have to be organized for charitable purposes. The difference is that there is some leniency given under C4 for participation in political or partisan activities. A 501c3 entity can't participate in any political or partisan activity to keep its tax-exempt status. A 501c4 entity, and I think it was intended to cover civic organizations and social leagues, things of that nature, can have some overlap, but its primary purpose cannot be political or partisan agenda. So that's the simplest way to distinguish between them. The political focus cannot be the primary purpose. And if it is the primary purpose, then it's not entitled to 501c4 protection.
Oh, right. The way I read it, and I'm going to put it in simple terms, a C3 might be a church.
A church, or just consider a classic purely charitable entity, whichever one you want. It exists for the sole purpose of, pick whatever charity, fill in whatever blank you want. But a church is a good example.
Right. And a C4 gives a certain amount of leniency, but there's no real solid rules about, you know, how much charitable work you do.
I think that's basically correct. I'm not an expert in this kind of stuff, but that's the fundamental distinction that I read between the two code sections.
Whoa! Right. So, John, have the folks in Cleveland, which is where this IRS debacle started,
Cincinnati,
done anything
I believe.
Wrong? Oh, might have been Cincinnati.
It's Cincinnati.
Right. Have they actually done anything wrong? Or were they just following the letters of the law?
I think they followed the strategy that was employed with Benghazi, too. Just delay, deny, and obfuscate till after the election. They didn't want these conservative groups to get organized. And they waited out till the election. It's the same strategy with every other of these incidents we've had that we're just learning about. That seems to be the strategy from pretty much every government agency, doesn't it?
Sam, your thoughts?
Like I said, I really believe, you know, this does not surprise me that at every level, that the government is being used not to help and serve the people it's supposed to, but to punish people or keep tabs on people or stop them from getting something that they seek. Now, if they've done something wrong, by all means, you know, then they shouldn't be able to have that item. But it seems to me that the IRS works for us. We fund them. We pay their damn salaries. And they should be lending a helping hand to get people walking through the process to get this thing done and helping them, as opposed to putting up roadblocks to stop them from doing it, whether it's a group from the left or a group from the right. And that's the type of government we've had over the last, since 2001. Since 9/11, government, whether it's been the Butchies or the Obamas, are all about controlling us and, you know, using their own agenda, furthering their own people, furthering their own causes, you know, and serving a special interest and not the people. And it's sad. But, you know, I think they're guilty. I think it's the most funniest thing about it, I mean, the most ironic thing about it, is the agents who are actually doing the dirty work for the guys up top can't be fired because they have civil service. I mean, isn't that incredible? That's how pathetic of a society we live in, that when certain government people are abusing their powers, and a lot of them do, and they're caught with their hand in a cookie jar, whatever it may be, we can't get rid of them. We can't get rid of them. And that's a sad state of affairs that the democracy of ours has fallen into disrepair.
Oh, come on. We got rid of Nixon. But
Nixon got rid of Nixon.
Yeah, right.
He wouldn't have resigned. Who knows what would have happened? But I think, you know, you take this ILS item and you shove it right next to what's going on with the snooping of the reporters and how far that's gone. What I still don't understand is, you know, John, maybe you could help me. Who the hell is running this country? Because all I hear from the president and all the people around him are, we don't know. I don't know. I get my news just like you do. Well, who the hell is running this country then? A bunch of bureaucrats?
I'm running it.
Oh, okay. Well, can you get a couple of that stimulus money my way?
Yes, you shall receive stimulus money. Thank you for asking.
Actually, you bring up a great issue. Yeah, this whole debacle about journalists is turning really ugly. You know, you've got Obama saying, yeah, we want whistleblowers. You know, we need to expose corruption. And yet, on the other hand, you know, his administration is authorizing all sorts of strange and secretive measures to, check phone records and who knows what else. John, is this the way we need to go?
Well, I mean, I was mollified. Didn't he assign Eric Holder to investigate his own actions regarding the bugging and hacking of email into reporters? And as far as I know, Peter, if you know of another case, let me know. I don't think a reporter has ever been accused of being a co-conspirator in a national security leaking case.
Well, I don't know. The only thing that I'm aware of in this is phone records. Now, I don't know if something's been expanded and they've searched emails, but
yeah.
John's right. They're not targeting journalists. They're trying to find evidence to find out who's leaking information.
But they named James Rosen a co-conspirator to access his email.
Well, that may have been the means by which they used to try to access it.
I think that's unprecedented. Obviously, the guy's just doing his job, trying to develop information. He's not trying to sabotage the government national security.
That's probably true. Some of the co-conspiracy statutes are written so that your intent may not have anything to do with it. If you're doing acts that further whatever conspiratorial enterprise there is, you may be a co-conspirator underneath some of these statutory definitions. He doesn't have to do it.
Stories the New York Times has broken over the years compromised national security, and they were never targeted.
Well, just because somebody hasn't been targeted in the past doesn't mean they shouldn't be targeted in the future.
But I would like to know the law enforcement officer who claimed that the journalist was a co-conspirator in this crime. He should definitely have to justify that. Because it was
No. That would be covered under, national security, blanket. They can make claims, but not actually out the source.
I didn't know that. So their warrants are actually sealed
Yes.
Yeah, apparently in this case, well, I don't know about the warrants. Never mind. I don't know about the warrants. I was talking about the subpoenas.
No, I was talking about the warrant to actually get a judge to sign off on it.
Okay. I believe, and I could be wrong, it was sealed because it involved national security.
Okay,
so,
yeah, see, I'm not familiar with that, Simon, because all the warrants that I was ever involved in were public record.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I just can read something to you. The decision to apply to some CNN breaking news. The decision to apply for the search warrant was vetted at the department's highest levels, including Holder. The decision to issue a warrant was made by a federal magistrate judge.
There you go.
Well, I know, Sam, the decision's made to justify the judge signing off on it. Is that sealed?
No, it doesn't say. It's just that this was not for the phone record. This is to go into Rosen's emails.
Well, I think that person should be made to justify how he could consider just an average reporter part of the conspiracy.
I think when John, we talked about Peter, we were all talking, I think we all agreed last week that this was about more not the James Rosen, the bad person, is who his source is. This is about the Obama administration not liking leaks and going after them. I think that's what we kind of all came to the conclusion about. Why would they, as Peter pointed out, why would they want to find out how many times he called
someone? I already knew who his source was, Sam. It was the Korean guy. I can't remember his name.
The what?
They already knew his source. It was a Korean guy, Kim something.
Yeah, but it could have been other. Yeah, I know, but they still wanted they had to verify it, obviously, and maybe there were other ones. But I mean, as Peter said, how many times do they want to know that James Rosen called mom and dad up?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that's a lot of the records they're going to find and in regards to that. But to go after the emails, now you're really getting into a slippery slope as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And you're entering into an arena where people don't want to talk to reporters because, reporter can say, yeah, this is all private. Yeah, I won't mention your name, but along come the feds, and they capture 2 months of telephone records, and they fiddle through the list of people that called you or you called, and. Whoa! It looks like a bit of a fishing expedition. You know, future stories are now toast because no one's going to talk to you. I mean, it's scary. This is Big Brother at work.
Well, Simon, that's what they want. They wanted to chill the whistleblowers so they'd be scared to contact anyone.
That's correct. Oh, by the way, let me add to this, just so you know, this breaking news. An FBI affidavit used to obtain the warrant for Rosen's emails described him as potentially, quote, being an aider and an editor and a co-conspirator and the crime of disclosing government secrets, quote, unquote.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, I mean, he should have to justify that allegation. What's that?
Oh, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, you talk about
it's
Nixonian. Bingo. That's Nixonian. You're now, and that's a great debate that's going to have to happen in this country. We need to have a freedom of the press. We need to have whistleblowers. We need to have reporters, investigative journalism. If they're going to be subject to this sort of potential scrutiny by the government, why would you want to be an investigative journalist? Maybe that's just what the Obama administration and other previous administration and probably ones coming in the future want. You ever think about that? It's all about to shut down information.
I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm sure I've whined on about it before. It is illegal to take photographs in a factory farm unless you have the permission. which you will never get. You know, cows, pigs, chickens, you know, all cramped in tiny cages. But, yeah, it's illegal. And if you publish those pictures, it's a felony.
Now, where is that the case? Is that in your home state, Simon, or is that a federal rule? I've never heard that before.
It's federal, I believe.
So a factory farm, just so I'm clear, is literally an indoor factory farm, or what exactly are we talking about?
Yeah, it's indoor. Yeah, it could be pigs, could be cattle, could be chickens, could be earthworms. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Very interesting. So I guess in the era when, you know, people are torturing supposedly veal calves and chickens and things like that, somebody wants to take a picture of it and post it, and apparently there's a law that makes that a felony. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Huh.
Oh, Simon, can't you send that to a federal agency and have them investigate?
No. Well, yes.
Anonymously.
You could, but, you know, well, good question. Anonymously. How anonymous can you be?
You could be very anonymous. Send it in the mail.
So. I don't think so.
Huh.
The whole thing just bothers me. But let's get back to the IRS story. The head of the IRS branch of dealing with non-profits, someone Lerner, got hauled up in front of lawmakers, and she pleaded the fifth. What do you make of that?
To me, that's what any lawyer will advise a client to do in a situation like that. I mean, she's the subject of a Department of Justice investigation now, and there are potential criminal penalties that attach to that. And if there was wrongdoing, that's appropriate. The criminal penalty should attach if there was in fact wrongdoing. And any lawyer worth his or her salt will immediately tell their client in that situation to take the fifth. You have an absolute right to take the fifth. It's part of your constitutional rights, and it's crazy not to. It's crazy not to in a situation like that where you're basically being hauled out. You're basically being hauled out as a political public scapegoat to be thrown to the wolves in a situation like that. You'd be foolish not to take the fifth.
Peter, I agree with you, but usually when you give the fifth, can you give a statement, or is that just political theater type thing? Did she waive a fifth?
No, you don't waive the fifth by making some sort of preliminary statement. Okay. I think that's a myth, and I think that's for drama. She opened her mouth and said something, so now she has to talk. That's crazy. That's not the way the Fifth Amendment works. I don't remember the scenario is, but you take the fifth in response to direct questioning. And if you start answering direct questioning, then arguably you can waive the fifth with respect to what you've said. But if you make a general statement and then say, look, I'm not going to be able to answer any more questions, I've been instructed to take the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, that's not an improper waiver.
Okay.
That's not a waiver.
I was wondering why Fitcher, or whatever, I haven't pronounced his name, didn't keep her on the stand and just keep asking her 100 questions and make her look like a I refuse to answer that on the ground it might incriminate me. I refuse to answer that on the ground it might incriminate me. But that's what would have played over and over for the media. I thought politically it was stupid of him for political theater to let her go. But that's just my take. And now she's gone, right? She got laid off or fired or what happened to her?
And she's on administrative leave.
Aid, of course.
Yes, of course.
Well, you know, if there's a determination made that, that there wasn't anything improper here, then, you know, I don't know what else to say about all of this.
Do you think there's something going on that you made her take the fifth?
I think that when you are the subject of a witch hunt and everyone in the room, and there's already a crowd beating outside screaming for your head before you've even testified, I think you'd be crazy to talk in an environment like that.
She said she was innocent. So what did she have
to hide? She said she did nothing wrong, yeah.
And that's not
to say that that's not true. But when you're talking to an audience with the decks already stacked, and they're not there to get the truth, they're there to burn you at the stake.
Half those people, I agree with you about the Republican, but the Democrats are going to come running to
the president had weighed in on the issue and condemned it, and in my opinion, he did so without knowing the true facts, and I don't know why that is. But the climate, the news stories, the sentiment. They weren't there to find the truth. They were there to get a scapegoat, in my opinion.
And I have to agree with you. For every bad thing that goes on, you got to find someone that you can publicly hang and let her look like the victim.
As soon as you start talking about, she's
the one wielding the power. I'm glad it bounced back on her. Now the stuff that she's done with her power, misused. It's not the first time she's misused power. She went after Pat. And I'm no big fan of the 700 Club, and I'm no big fan of Pat Robinson and all those people. Okay, she went after them. And you should have heard. I don't know if you heard when she was with the IRS, and Pat Robinson's attorney, who's retired, I can't remember his name, gave a. He was like appalled that this woman has risen to such a level that she has, given his experience with her, which was with the FCC, no, the Federal Elections Commission, FEC, and what she did to Robinson and other groups that were religious affiliated, you know, appalled him. He gave some things and showed some public records that she had done. And those are the type of things, this goes back to what I said earlier. It's not about Republicans and Democrats anymore. Long time ago, that ended with me. This is about misuse of power by government officials. And it seems to be getting worse. It got bad under the Bush administration, and it seems to have gotten worse under the Obama administration. They consolidate their power, hold on to it, tighten the noose, screw their enemies and whatnot, but they want total control to put their agendas forward. And it should scare all of us. I'm glad that she has to deal with the Congress. She's not the victim. She finally got some payback from what she's done to other people with her abuse of power. Because I guarantee you, Peter, I learned that, and I know you're an attorney, you know a lot more than I do, but I'm a historian. I studied a lot about the Watergate thing. And this whole damn thing with Obama and Holder, the reporters, the IRS, it is so Nixonian, it's incredible, to the point that these people are almost repeating the same sort of stupid stories that we heard from from John Dean, from G. Gordon Liddy, from E. Howie Hunt, and all those people. And everyone was there was lying to cover their asses and to protect the guy at the top, because the guy at the top was making sure they got paid. And that's important. It's history repeating itself. And I think everyone's shocked by it. I'm not. I know where these groups of people come from. And John, you brought it up. Acorn, George Soros, and all that. They're just as bad for the American people as the neocons are. And we as a country have to take it back again and get government working for us, not against us.
And John, I have to ask you this. Do you feel that, you know, once a president is, put into office, it really doesn't matter, you know, which party it is, we the people are just going to get screwed?
I agree with you, Simon. I used to think that. I was just one of the most naive SOBs who really thought political parties made a difference. When these men and women got up there, they really wanted to do things. It is, you know, I'm reading a book called The Age of Betrayal, The Triumph of Money in America by Jack Beatty. And he makes a quote from someone that, from Rutherford B. Hayes, an ex-president of the United States, good old Rutherford, it was in the 1870s, okay? And he wrote in his diary after he had been president, he could not say this publicly, and it wasn't published till long after his death, that the country that was of the people, for the people, and by the people is now of the corporations, for the corporations, by the corporations. And he wrote that in the 1870s at the age of the robber barons. And Beatty goes into his introduction and makes it in, it's just as bad today as it was back in the Gilded Age, which was a terrible time for the middle class and the less off, and a great time for the super rich, because they control government at every level. The special interests control governments at every level today, just like they did way back in the 1870s and all that point. And we in the middle class, we're going to have to rise up and change this, because the rich aren't going to help us and the poor aren't going to help us. And it's going to be up to the middle class in this country to right the ship of state, or it's just going to get worse before it gets better. Because when you have government working against you, you know, you never done anything wrong, and they just want to spy on you, and they just want to look through your record. They want to make sure you're not someone who's going to be a whistleblower. I mean, Simon, you said it yourself, how can you on one hand say, we want whistleblowers to help us run a better, more efficient government, and on the same token, with the other hand, want to screw them for doing so?
Right.
So I guess I'm going to answer the question and make a long story short. Yes, it doesn't matter who the president is. It's all about, great example. What was the big issue during the last presidential election? It was about greed, corporations, Mitt Romney's money, the 47%, Wall Street's bad, blah, 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 blah. Everyone heard diddly squats since Obama was reelected about any corporate reform. As long as Wall Street's going up, 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 and up, don't give a shit until the bottom falls out. And then it's going to be hell to pay like it was in 2008.
Right. John, you've been remarkably quiet. Do you agree with the idea that, it really doesn't matter what party label? You know, we the people still end up taking it in the rectum?
No, I don't agree with that at all. I'm pretty cynical about the corruption in government, but not that much. If I did, I wouldn't even vote. And I'd like to say to Sam that you're affording the most powerful person in the world a defense you wouldn't even grant your own 8-year-old kid, Sam, when he says,
yep,
Daddy, but everybody does it. You wouldn't say, oh, okay, no problem. But with Obama, you're letting them get away with that.
How am I letting Obama get away with that, John?
No, it sounds like you're saying everybody does it. Doesn't matter who.
No, not me. I, not me at all. I think everyone, they do it. My city council.
You wouldn't even
go
around that.
What?
You would hold them responsible.
I hold the president, it's his administration. Of course I hold them responsible. But guess
what? It sounds like you're saying everybody does it, nothing we can do.
Right now, yeah, John, I hate to be cynical. I don't think there's much you can do until it plays itself out, until the American people wake up, which is a sleeping giant, as they always say. And when we do wake up, we're a very powerful nation that does respond to things. Right now, our biggest problem is apathy. No one cares. Like I said, the middle class is getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed from both ends. But as long as I don't know what it is. If I had the answers, I'd be sitting on a mountaintop, and people from all over the world would come and ask me questions, and I'd be a very happy person. You know, I could answer
some
questions.
I think you got to start with holding people accountable. I know.
You know what? Yes, we do.
Hold your own kids accountable.
Well,
and
how do I hold him accountable? Okay, who am I?
Don't vote for him in the next presidential election.
The what?
Don't vote for him in the next presidential election.
Like with the IRS agent, you call your congressman and tell them to call her back.
You know what my congressman would say to me, John, even if he would take my phone call, which he wouldn't, because I don't write the checks, and that's what's going to happen. People don't realize this. They don't give a shit about us. They care about the lobbyists.
Okay,
you know,
well, then there's nothing you can do. I don't know what to
tell you. That's correct. There's nothing. Right now, as we speak, I firmly believe I'm not happy about it. I mean, do I want to see it change? That's why I take part in the discussions every Sunday. Proud to. That's why I try to stay involved and talk to people.
Peter says she's been made a scapegoat and there's a witch hunt. Cool. What if you're audited before this, Lois Lerner, and you go in there and say, I think this is a witch hunt. I'm being made a scapegoat. I want to take the fifth. What do you think she'd tell you?
She's got robbed. The FBI is going to come and they're going to throw you in jail.
That's right.
Whatever.
So it's ironic.
I
afforded a courtesy the average citizen they deal with isn't. And I don't know if she was going to be made a scapegoat or not. I just want the truth. What did she do? And who ordered her to do it, if anyone?
I hope that we get that, and I hope one of the great things
we're
that might come out
salary.
Of it.
As a public employee, she's required to do that.
You would think so, but not anymore.
Also, I heard Alan Dershowitz on the radio the other day, a man I rarely agree with. He's saying he thinks she did waive her Fifth Amendment privilege by making that opening statement. And I've been in federal court several times, and I've never heard anyone make a statement of innocence and then refuse to answer questions. So I don't know if court applies to the Senate or not, or House, but I've never heard of it.
I've got to get Peter's comment on that.
I've never heard anyone do that. Maybe you have.
All right, Peter, is it permissible to give a short opening statement and then say, you know, get out of Dodge, I'm pleading the fifth?
Is it permissible? I think it's absolutely permissible to do that. Someone just did it. The question is, what are the consequences of forming those words in the manner in which she did? I personally don't have a problem with it. I don't think you waive anything. You know, when you waive something, it's got to be a knowing, intelligent, and voluntary and complete waiver. And I don't that's what the doctrine of waiver is.
But, have you ever been in court and seen someone do this?
No, I've not. But I don't normally do criminal matters, and the exercise of the Fifth Amendment is very rare. I can tell you that when I'm taking a deposition, and on those few occasions when someone I'm deposing says, you know, I'm not going to answer that on the grounds of the Fifth Amendment, I have no ability to make them answer. I can't hit them with a hammer and say, speak. I can't.
Yeah, but a judge isn't present.
Them.
They can.
Well, a judge can order them, can order that the Fifth Amendment privilege is waived and that it is not permissible to assert it. But a judge cannot make someone speak.
Well, yeah.
A judge can say, you don't have that privilege here. It's not permissible grounds of objecting to questions.
Right, they can remand them to custody.
Well, there are different things that can be done. It depends on the situation, but you know, there's potential contempt. There's also
fine them. Yeah, whatever.
Or fine them. You know, typically what happens is, you know, in the civil context, if someone says, "I'm not going to answer that because of the Fifth," you have a big fight. You go in front of a judge, and the judge says, "No, you don't have a Fifth Amendment privilege here. You got to answer the questions." You still don't have to answer them. You still don't have to answer them. It's just that if you don't answer them now, you don't have a defense when somebody sanctions you or fines you or something like that. So,
Peter, this isn't civil.
I don't know what it is. It's Congress. It's the worst place on earth to go for fact gathering, in my opinion. It's all just a day drama acted out by a bunch of people with scripts trying to score brownie points with the voters. It's no place to gather truth. I don't know what it is. It's not a court of law. There's no judicial proceeding, and quite frankly, people have constitutional rights that don't go away because a bunch of members of Congress want to score brownie points with their voters and have a big hearing on it.
Why do they take the oath?
Well, because in my opinion, it would be imprudent if I was advising that person, if she was my client, and she said, "What do I do?" I say, "Take the Fifth, for God's sakes." It would be the same advice I would tell any client who had any specter of criminal prosecution. I would tell any of them.
But you can't.
Don't talk.
If you're representing, you're not a tax attorney, but if you try to take the Fifth, like Sammy said, you're going to jail.
No, that's not true. I don't know where that comes from. You know, Sam uttered a hypothetical that if you go before Lois Lerner to audit your taxes and you take the Fifth, she's going to throw you in jail. And I don't agree with that.
Well, what do you think?
I don't agree
happen?
With that. If you go to get an audit and you claim that you're going to take the Fifth, they'll say, fine, we're going to audit you and you're not going to testify and we'll come to our own determinations and we won't have the benefit of any explanation that you provide. And, you know, that's it. It's just going to be one side of the story. Congratulations. You just got the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, and then they're going to
They're going to audit you, and they're going to find problems, and you're not going to be able to rebut them because you've taken the Fifth, and they're going to draw their conclusions and hit you with a tax bill, okay? But that's the cost-benefit analysis you take. You say, I don't want to go to jail, so I'm not going to talk, and the IRS hypothetically says, okay, we'll audit you. You won't speak. We'll send you a bill. You won't go to jail, but you get a bill.
I don't know if that's true.
To me... You have an absolute Fifth Amendment right not to testify when you're the subject of a criminal investigation, and that applies across the board. You could go into a courtroom and invoke it. You could go to a deposition. You could go to a subpoena. You could go anywhere and invoke that privilege. What about McCarthyism in the 50s? You know, people were being hauled into the Senate to answer questions about whether or not they were communists, and the wise ones took the Fifth. They had to. There was no way out of that box other than taking the Fifth. And even then, it wasn't acceptable.
I'm talking about public officials.
Well, so what? They're public officials. They still have a Fifth Amendment constitutional right. It doesn't change just because you become a public official.
Like Sam said,
she is under the
corruption. That's the only way you're going to get to the bottom of it if you're on federal payroll.
I don't believe that you're going to get to the bottom of anything by having a congressional hearing on it. That's my personal opinion.
Right. When was the last time a congressional hearing actually got to the bottom of anything?
Watergate.
You know, especially when it's a highly televised event. I'd give a congressional hearing more hope of success if it was just an ordinary congressional hearing and you didn't have 8,000 television cameras in there filming every word. Once that happens, you could just throw the truth-seeking process out the window.
There's going to be 16,000 additional IRS agents hired to handle the enforcement arm of Obamacare, and apparently they have no responsibility to answer for their actions.
What you do, John, is you hear a simple thing like someone exercises a Fifth Amendment privilege, and you say, okay, therefore there are 16,000 officials who don't have any responsibility whatsoever, and that's what you do. You take one thing and you extrapolate.
Well, I guess to the bottom of any investigation, they're just all going to take the Fifth.
Well, they have a Department of Justice criminal investigation going on right now, and guess what? She doesn't have to testify in that either. But they're still going to investigate. And now
they're going to be running health care, too. It's going to be great.
Okay, then it's the end of the world. Phone it in. It's all over. It's toast. It's done. Because she took the Fifth, the whole world's going to collapse.
And, John, you know, think about it. The world isn't going to end.
Well, it didn't end on this sequester, so it will never end after this.
No, she will probably likely have to answer these questions someday, someplace, somewhere. But
well, I don't have a problem with taking a Fifth, Peter, at all. Don't get me wrong on that. I'm different with John. You know, I think people who take the Fifth in government have something to hide and or protect. And maybe she's protecting her own self and job, and she's hiding someone who kind of makes her she lands in a nice cushiony Wall Street firm or someplace like that. Remember, I'm cynical. All these people in government.
Well, I'm equally cynical, Sam. We're all equally cynical on this phone call.
I do believe she's misused her power before. She did in the FCC. She has a history of it. She's one of those. That's the people getting into government now. They get big money, big benefits, and they go after their boss's enemies because that's politics. The Republicans do it to the Democrats do it to the Republicans, and everybody in between gets screwed because it's better things to do.
You may be right. You may be right. She may be as guilty as sin, and I suspect that if that's true, her day's coming. But that doesn't
say
anything about...
Here's what I'm going to say. And you said something. The Department of Justice is doing it. I wouldn't trust Eric Holder if he told me day was light and night was dark. I wouldn't trust anybody in that administration. Appoint the special prosecutor. This warrants a special prosecutor. Of course, the Clinton stuff is ridiculous if they had to do that.
This warrants a special prosecutor.
This warrants a special prosecutor. I think it does.
Because Tea Party groups supposedly couldn't get tax exempt status.
There's more than Tea Party groups. There's other conservative groups. Everyone's forgetting about that. There's a Jewish conservative group, and there's some other ones. There's definitely a pattern to stop people from getting tax. A big question is why. It's too bad everyone has to have tax exempt status. That's a whole other issue, economic issue and whatnot. But my belief is when you've got government, whether especially bureaucratic government, especially something like the IRS, and you have a Department of Justice together going after reporters and reporters' emails and phone records and calling of an investigative reporter a co-conspirator because North Korea is getting a nuclear weapon. Hell, Dennis Rodman knew North Korea was getting a nuclear weapon.
I do agree with you that it sounds to me from hanging the co-conspirator allegations on that reporter's neck, it sounds to me like they were just trying to further their discovery efforts, and deep down they really didn't think he was a co-conspirator. But I also think they probably had some sort of prima facie grounds to make the allegation, and they made the allegation to get to the discovery. I don't know what to make of that. It seems to me that people in law enforcement, just like in every other walk of life, they get aggressive sometimes. That's the way they do it. I don't know what else to say about that.
Overreach, and it scares me.
Yeah, well,
and
you know.
The Patriot Act, was terrible, and this is just more of the same, guys. When is everyone going to wake up and see this? Doesn't matter. I'm not out to a bar. I think this guy, this Holder's record as Attorney General is atrocious, fast and furious. We have more questions than answers. I expect better from my Department of Justice. Okay, I expect better from the Attorney General. I expect better from the IRS people. I mean, these people can ruin people's lives, make people's lives miserable, and many times they exclude innocent people. And everyone forgets about that. Why should the burden of the proof be on the citizen? Shouldn't it be on the government? Isn't that what the whole Fifth Amendment thing is about, Peter? I don't have to self-incriminate myself. You have to find what things wrong with me.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The burden of proof is on the prosecutor, and prosecutor is just a fancy word for government. And yes, you're right. The burden of proof is on the government. And when they go to a magistrate judge and they assert that they have probable cause to issue a warrant, they lay out whatever that probable cause is, and the magistrate judge signs off on it, and then they get the warrant and they look at the emails. They're arguing that they're going about trying to gather evidence to support their burden of proof.
Okay, I understand that. But that's going against the first. He's a reporter. He's got sources. Tell me, isn't that going against a free press? What did he do? He didn't sell the nuclear bomb to North Korea. Nixon did this to Daniel Ellsberg. Okay, it was something he broke into someone's office to get the goods on people. That's what this is about. I don't understand why you don't see that. This administration
I'm not saying that I don't see that.
Don't you see the fact that the government overreach is a scary thing in this country? I don't care how high the stock market goes. We've got drones spying on us potentially. We've got they're everywhere. They got the IRS after you if they don't like you.
Tell me what you're more afraid of. What's scarier more? Are you more afraid of walking down the street and getting blown up by terrorists, or are you more afraid of the government overreaching and snooping around?
I'm more afraid of the government.
Okay.
I feel our military has done a great job on this Memorial Day weekend around the world, even though it's handicided sometimes in fighting this and fighting the and along with the other world people, our allies, trying to stop these terrorists. But however, you know, then again, you know, Peter, I never would think someone walking at 4 o'clock in the afternoon in broad daylight in London would get hacked to death either. But
yeah,
that happens every day. You know, that was a terrorist attack, and it happened everywhere in America.
I didn't see that video, but from what I understand, that was pretty shocking. They hacked a soldier to death with a meat cleaver right out front of his barrack post in London, which just seems incredible.
And people were walking by with shopping carts. Like, hey, it's an everyday occurrence. And it's not an everyday occurrence. And you can't do that in our country because enough people pull guns out and shoot you. But that's a whole other issue. But I feel I feel more secure walking down my street where I live in most parts of America that I won't get blown up, that I do. That doesn't scare me. That could happen anytime. I could get hit by a car too. I could be like a twister, you know, something of that nature. All these things that are out there, you know, just living can be a dangerous thing sometimes. It's dangerous enough as it is. It's tough enough as it is. But to have a government that seems to, every day, every year I get older, it gets bolder and more overreaching with its powers as it expands, gets bigger, nastier, and wants more. I have not seen a government of reason that's been out there working for the people. You know, they work for the special interest and they work for themselves. And when that changes, this is going to be a damn good country, and it can be a damn good country. Right now, it's about the corporation, for the corporation, and by the corporation, and the government does their dirty work.
Do you remember the Iran-Contra affair?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Now, what exactly did I understand what was going on with that? If I remember correctly, Congress had voted that they weren't going to fund the Iranian Contras in Nicaragua, and I guess offices of the president did it anyway. They funded just millions of dollars to wage an illegal war in Nicaragua.
On whose behalf?
I don't know. Corporations. You're absolutely right.
Right.
I don't
corporations behalf who were afraid that Nicaragua was going to nationalize their businesses or nationalize
But you talk about overreaching. I mean, that seems to be pretty significant. That was a pretty strong reach. And I guess
I happen to know someone that was involved with that. He's a pilot. And his first contract as a private military contractor was with Ollie North.
Good old Ollie. He made a whole career out of that thing, you know?
Right.
So one man's overreaching is another man's heroism. I don't know what to tell you. I mean,
I'm not saying Ollie. What North did was wrong. And wait a minute. He did that, but the president didn't know he was doing it because I think what's her name? Nancy Reagan was running the country with a Ouija board.
Ollie North basically said, I was doing my job, and it's
they all say that. That was a great thing to say after Nazi Germany, too. Hey, they told me I had to shove these people into the oven. I just followed orders. There's too many people following orders, even when the orders are wrong, because they need that paycheck. They want that. You know, we've got the wrong people in government. You know, I mean, let's face it. You know, I don't know about in California or in Missouri, but the only people who are judges in Ohio is because they can't make it as lawyers.
Well, you just set out my next phase of life.
I'm not the only one who states that, Peter. I'm not the only one who says that. Yeah.
I believe it. I laugh because it's true.
John, you're being remarkably quiet. I'm sure you have some pearls of wisdom.
I just so enjoy people butchering history. But
well, by all means, please correct me. I don't remember the gist of it. I was just trying to get the broad strokes.
It's a long time ago.
Go ahead,
ago.
Correct me. Why don't you fill in the gaps? Go ahead.
You really want me to get into it, Simon? Iran-Contra?
Yeah.
Well, you waived the issue by opening the door, so why don't you go ahead and fill in the gaps? You go ahead.
I'll make it as brief as possible. I do remember this because I contributed to Ollie North's Defense Fund. It's the first time I ever contributed to anything, and I think the last, actually. But what it was Congress passed the Boland Amendment, I believe. He was a congressman from Massachusetts, which made it illegal to fund the Contras. And there's a lot of discussion academically about whether Congress can direct foreign policy, whether or not that was a legitimate law. But anyway, Ollie North came up with this brilliant idea to fund the Contras by paying the terrorist groups to release our hostages in Lebanon and other countries, if you guys recall. At the time, we had a lot of hostages, you know, kept for years. And he looked at it as a win-win. The hostages were freed, and the Contras were funded.
So he funded Contras in contravention of an act of Congress telling him not to do that. I thought that's what I said.
There was a lot of discussion over whether or not it was legal because Boland shouldn't
be
directing.
Yeah, so if you decide that a law that Congress acts is illegal and you think it's wrong, it's okay. Just go ahead and find a way around it. That's okay. That's normal.
Just take the fifth
SOP.
And you'll fly.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter what the law is. Just skip it.
That's right. Just
if you don't think it's a good law, you just go ahead and say
it. Get a job in a big corporation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I'm going to remember that. That's good. That's a good word. Memo for the file.
Hey, if Iran-Contra was all done, I mean, whoever was directing the show, it was wrong. Okay? It was an end-around on the American people.
Well,
it
was certainly overreaching. And
well, Sammy, tell that to the hostages and their families that were free.
And John, didn't know what I would do. You know what? Okay, maybe that's going to be Teddy Roosevelt. That's what he's sending the Marines in. I mean, that's what we have Marines for. You know, you do all these all these crazy things that we do. We shoot ourselves in the foot constantly because we got to help
like 5-6 years. I remember Terry Anderson and actually Bill Buckley, a CIA chief, was tortured and murdered.
John, I remember, and it's sad. And of course, unfortunately, I hate to say this, they take that risk when they take that job.
That's old news. Really, no one cares. But
what?
No one really cares. They don't even care about Benghazi, much less 30 years ago.
They do. People do care about it. Like, you know, people do care about stuff like that. Unfortunately, the people who do care are not looking for what I'm looking for. They're making it look like it is a witch hunt. And it shouldn't, you know, they are.
Memorial Day is important to remember the people who did sacrifice their lives for the country.
And of course, it's terrible what happened there. And I think most people realize it. But you know what, John, like I said, I have friends who 2-3 years ago were probably more involved in what, but now that the stock market and 401ks are doing great, and the stock market's doing, you know, they care less. I mean, they care less. And that's part of the problem that we face as a society and a democracy is one of the things that our apathy, the people on it, you know, the only active. Look, in 2008, when the stock market hit, collapsed, the housing bubble burst. Believe me, people were talking everywhere because everybody was hurting. There were people you couldn't go anywhere without having a great conversation about what was going on. We got screwed. What happened? And here we are, 5 years later. The same phony baloney money, the same phony baloney things happening at Wall Street, that the Fed's cooking the books and whatnot, but everyone's happy.
Right.
And what they learned is, hey, you know what, if we keep everybody happy, and that's the big stock market, kind of ignore what's going on, we did our bailouts and whatnot, hope everything works out, you know what, we'll be okay, we'll just deny stuff. When I see a president of the United States, whether it's George Bush or Barack Obama or fill in the blank, get up there and say, gee, I just found out about this just like you did. Through the news, pretty much, you're president of the United States? You actually said that?
But well, Sam, doesn't he have a staff who's supposed to advise him? Why does he even have
John, I agree.
I'm glad we're talking about this in the same breath that we're also talking about Iran-Contra, because I seem to remember that was the major defense back then, too. I had no idea.
I agree with Peter. That's my point, Peter. That's my point. It has, and that's goes back to what Simon asked me. Does it matter who the hell the president is? No, it doesn't. Because they're all, especially in the second term, gentlemen. It seemed Iran-Contra happened in Reagan's second term, a total disaster second term. Clinton had his cigar and his blue dress and all that stuff, totally disaster second term. Bush second term, it's a total disaster anyway. And here we are with his problem. Now we have Obama already only 4 months into his second term. We still have the truth about Benghazi hasn't been realized, or maybe it has been, and people are mad. You have the IRS, you have the AP, And look at this. His policies are, whatever, dead in the water right now because he's busy dealing with scandals. And all he can do, he's lucky he can go to a tornado-ravaged Oklahoma today and get his photo op and do his things and all that and not have to worry about telling the American people the truth because he doesn't want to.
Was he going to be there with Christie?
What?
Yeah, that was true. Was he going to be in Oklahoma with Christie?
Yeah. Oh, no, you can't recognize Chris Christie anymore. He's skinny. He's skinny.
Yeah,
than Obama.
I haven't seen him.
Neither have I. So anyway, that's all you've got. And then, Peter, I agree with you. We've got these scandals. And I think, I hate to say this, but the Confederate States of America had one thing right and one thing only right. 1 6-year term for the president. These second terms turn into disasters because I think what happens is the people and the president, whoever they are, and the people around them get so power mad they don't have to worry about anything. Election's over, they won. Let's just do what we want to do, and what the hell with everybody else.
If you give them one 6-year term, then you're getting that right from the get-go.
Yeah, Sam, that's what I was thinking.
What?
Then you're getting the same thing from day one. They don't have to stand for re-election.
They're only going to be there for 6 years.
That's only 2 years. More years difference, though.
Well, that's all I'm trying to say. 2 years is better than none. But that was about it. But it's terrible. It's terrible. It could be better. That's what really makes me mad, I guess, and might make my blood boil and get upset. We have intelligent people. We have Peter, Simon, John. We all come from 4 different walks of life. We agree to disagree. We respect each other. We talk about the issues. I've learned a lot from all you. I hope you've learned a little from me and anything. But, there's other people like us. There's a lot more people like us out there. And
yeah,
you have to
remember, these entrenched bureaucrats. And, Simon, you'll remember this from it was either Tinker, Taylor, or Smiley's people. Their ability to survive is based on their ability to change sides instantly with sincerity and loyalty, which is placed above integrity and honor. So that's what it's the bureaucracy just as much as the president.
Okay. I think you've grossly misquoted it. But,
well, was the general idea right?
Yes, I think it was.
Because I think I think Smiley tells Esterhazy that.
Right. Yeah. A career,
bureaucrat.
Not politician, but the worker for the government. Needs to be ambivalent to the person in charge. They need to do what they need to do.
You mean neutral?
Right.
But they're not. That's the point.
Well, how can we change it?
For one thing, I think you got to hold them to a standard where, as public employees, they have to answer questions before Congress.
What about baseball players when they were subpoenaed up there? Do they have to answer questions?
They're not public employees. They're not paid by the taxpayers.
Well, I think they're paid by the public. All their salaries come from all the fan support. I don't care how you slice it. They get their money because we watch, period.
Well, you could say that about anything, Peter.
Yep, that's right. You could say that about anything. That's
who signs the check? It's the team,
that's exactly
not the
right.
Government.
And that's why the whole constitutional Fifth Amendment question should not turn on who your employer is.
Yeah, I disagree. I think they should be held to a higher standard.
Well,
so,
they are being criminally prosecuted by the DOJ, and they are being hauled before Congress. Just the act of being hauled before Congress and asked a question is clearly holding somebody to a higher standard. But they have constitutional rights just like everybody else.
Okay, John. So by your thinking, every time a new bunch of people come in, you should automatically fire the old people and get your own guys in positions of power?
Isn't that what's been done now? No, I'm not at all. I'm saying they should be neutral. I agree with you. But it doesn't seem like the ones who advance through the ranks anyway are.
Okay.
They serve any master.
All right. Let's talk about the IRS. I mean, I don't much care for them. But, you know, when a new master comes in, should he be able to, you know, fire everyone and bring in his lackeys?
Don't you think you got to lead by example? I remember quite a while ago, Sam and I were concerned that Tiny Tim Geithner was heading the Treasury, which for people that's who runs the IRS, Treasury Department, answerable to them. He lied on his taxes. What kind of example is that? So what do you expect from the employees?
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, well, that shouldn't the head guy at least be clean? In this case, it wasn't.
At least we talk about what he did when he was with the head of the New York Fed, but that's even worse.
But I agree with you, John.
No, I agree with John.
You're wondering why the bureaucrats are taking liberties?
I think the answer is this. I think the answer is to shrink the size of government, and I don't think government employees, the public sector, should be getting the pay and benefits that better than the people who support them. And I think that's a problem. That's why they stay there too long. That's why they're willing to do the dirty work of their bosses to keep those cushy jobs, to keep those great perks and bennies and all that stuff. And that also goes for the elected officials, too. I mean, their pay, wages, and salaries and benefits and the fact they can get they can become lobbyists and whatnot and work for the corporations. That's got to change. There's got to be some the ties have to be cut between government, the employees, and a lot better than they are. And the taxpayers shouldn't be getting, overtaxed to pay for bureaucrats to come back and walk all over them. That's the way to do it. Now, Simon, you raised a great question. Does the president come in and clean house about a million federal employees and we start all over again 4 years from now? You know, does that happen? Some people might say yes. Some people, of course, will say no, that we need these people because they know how to shuffle the paper correctly. They know how to read the newspapers, why they're supposed to be working correctly. They know how to call off work correctly. I don't know. Have you guys ever seen the pay scales for federal employees and how they work?
I'm afraid to find this out.
Step 27, step 16, they make it is incredible. And then there's the buyouts, then there's the sick pay, then there's the this pay, then there's the, I mean, it's amazing what they can. When I find out that a bureaucrat has done something crooked or something stupid at the bequest of his or her higher up, I'm not surprised. They can't get that job like that in the real world. They can't.
Right.
And that's why they do what they do. And I think the other thing is that there is no checks and balance on the bureaucrats and the government. The elected officials need to be the checks and balance on, overzealous bureaucrats at any level. Now they need those bureaucrats campaign donations. They need those bureaucrats to go in their families to go pound yard signs, to go make phone calls for them, et cetera, et cetera. It's a built-in political army. On both sides, and we have to be wary of all of that.
I think we've beaten this subject to death. There's a couple of other subjects I want to bring up, particularly the Jodi Arias case. She stabbed the guy 29 times, slit his throat, and then shot him in the head. Death sentence is on the on the marker, but
the jury couldn't agree. Now, technical legal question aimed at Peter. As I understood it, right, the death penalty phase didn't have to be unanimous. If there's one dissenting juror, right, death sentence goes off the mark, and it's automatic life imprisonment. And yet, this week we heard that, oh no, we've got to get a whole new bunch of jurors in to redecide the penalty phase. Can you kind of explain it to me?
Well, I think we're confusing different doctrines here. And when it comes to finding guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, in we call the guilt or innocence phase, the rule is that if you have even one juror who believes that the prosecution has failed to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, that in and of itself suggests reasonable doubt and therefore leads to an acquittal or a non-conviction, I should say. I'm not sure that the same holds true in the death penalty phase. And I think that's where the confusion comes from. Now, what was the juror vote in the Arias penalty phase? Do you know, Simon?
Yeah, 8-6.
8-6 in favor or against?
In favor.
Well, look, that's pretty close. That's pretty close. When you have basically half the jury saying they don't know if they want to kill her or not, that's a pretty close call to me. Anyway, regardless, it's a hung jury. It's a hung jury. The prosecution hasn't met its burden of proving what it intends to prove, but the person hasn't gotten a complete acquittal either. So,
All right, but hold on. All right, jury found her guilty of first-degree murder.
Correct.
All right, then they came back, and then there was another mini-trial, if you will, talking about aggravating factors. All right, it was found to be true, and then we go into the should we kill her or not phase.
Yeah, and the jury was, with respect to the question that you just raised, should we kill her or not? The jury was obviously having a very difficult time with that. I mean, that's not like they're close. They're about evenly split. And that suggests to me that in the face of all the incriminating evidence that was piled up against her, including her own soliloquy when she was on the witness stand and looked and sounded like an idiot, that there's a part of them that still feels that somehow it's not appropriate to give her the death penalty here. And
all right.
That's the jury system at work. That's the jury system at work.
All right, but everything I had read and said, you go vote on giving the death penalty. If it's, a 12 votes for, it's going to happen. If it's not unanimous, then
my understanding, and each state is different. Remember, murder is typically a state law offense. It's typically governed usually by state crime. Every state has the right to prosecute murders within the confines of the U.S. Constitution. Every state has the right to prosecute murderers and crimes in its own way. And in Arizona, my understanding is that in the death penalty phase, there has to be a unanimous decision with respect to the death penalty, and that if the first trial does not result, the first penalty trial does not result in the death penalty, my understanding in Arizona is the prosecutors get one more chance, and if that doesn't result in a death penalty, unanimous death penalty verdict by the jury, then she gets life imprisonment. And personally, I think the prosecution should just drop it. I think it's pretty clear the jury is having a tough time giving her death, and they should just let it go and give her life. That's what I think should happen.
Right. As I said, I'm not up on the law, but you know, my reading of it was, it has to be unanimous. If it's not, then automatically it goes to...
Well, under Arizona law, the prosecution gets two chances. First, it has to be unanimous, but if they don't get unanimous on the first penalty phase, they can seek a second penalty phase hearing in front of a different jury, and if they don't get unanimous then it's life. So they get two shots. So they really want... To give capital punishment away in Arizona, and they want to make sure the prosecution gets a fair chance at putting someone in the gas chamber. You know, the problem with cases like this from a death penalty point of view is that when you have relations between people, husband, wife, lovers, siblings, people have an innate feeling that whatever happens, it's the result of years and years of something else. And it's just an innate feeling that people have. And every person can identify with the feeling that they've known or loved someone that at a moment in time, you know, they were really, really angry with. And it's never an excuse to murder. It's never a justifiable defense. But when it comes to something like sentencing at the penalty phase, giving you the death penalty for it, there's something in each human's heart that connects with the idea that you're so angry, you lost it, and it never gets them off the murder charge, but it does come into play when you talk about something like the death penalty. It's inherently more understandable for a jury to understand why someone did this than it is for a jury to understand why someone did, for example, what these guys did in Boston. When they killed people they didn't even know, they killed strangers, they maimed hundreds of innocent people. That's something that really angers a jury. This, it angers them, but they understand it. They understand that something snapped in this woman. She was obviously a fruitcake. She snapped. She lost it. She went ballistic. And at some level, they understand why human beings do that in interpersonal relationships. Now, in a situation like Boston, you know, you put those guys in front of a jury anywhere, and odds are you're going to get a unanimous death penalty verdict if it ever came down to that.
Right. Sam, have you been following this case at all?
This case is old news. I'm waiting for Trevor Martin Zimmerman. Forget about Arias. Forget about the other one. Bring on the right to stand, Zimmerman and Martin. Let's go. Another case, old news.
Here's some new news for you. I happen to know someone that has press creds for the Zimmerman trial. I'll have hot updates, shall we say.
When is that trial scheduled to get started? What's going on?
A couple weeks.
Oh, boy, that will be wonderful. We'll all have plenty to talk about on that one.
Until the next one comes around.
All right.
Until the next one comes around. That's very true.
All right. We're running a little short on time. How about the deal with Sheriff Joe Arpaio? He has been slapped with thou shalt not, you know, racial profile people in the state of Arizona.
Well, it's very interesting. What,
right.
What exactly did the federal judge say? I heard some smattering of about this last week, but that he was unconstitutionally targeting Hispanics for, you know, selective law enforcement activities, as far as I understood it.
Right. Using no reasonable cause, he would get his people to pull them over if they were driving or stop them on the street and demand immigration information.
Well, this sheriff has always struck me as a little bit of a cowboy. You know, Arizona itself has been in the news, not just for things like Jody Arias, but for controversial immigration reform bills. I'm curious what John has to think about it, because, you know, he's ex-law enforcement. I'm curious what his thoughts are.
You know, Peter, this has been going on for that guy with, 20 years at least.
Yeah.
He seeks publicity. I don't know. The people of Phoenix have reelected him how many times? 5 or 6? So I just have to go by what they apparently like what he's doing. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But the ACLU has been after him for years. They probably sued him 20 times. So I don't think this bothers the guy at all. It's not going to change the way he conducts business or his department.
I think that's very true. I think that's exactly
he
correct.
He relishes. He's going to be on TV, you know, now combating the ACLU. That's what he likes.
So he's got his own dragon to fight, and he looks like the hero doing it, and everybody in the state's going to love it.
The guy's like 80 years old. He lives for this.
81.
I think that's true. I think he loves it.
He loves it. So they're doing him a favor.
Yeah, afraid so. They're doing him a favor.
I'm not sure I agree with it. See, yeah, we're down to like the last 3 minutes here. Very last subject has to be the horrible slaying that happened in London this week. I can't even get my mind over it. You know, you find a soldier and basically hack him to pieces with a machete. You do it in, you know, daylight, and then you hang around for the cops to arrive and invite people to take videos of it. I mean, whoa, what's wrong here? Someone jump in.
Well, I'll tell you what's wrong, Simon.
Go ahead, Sam.
I'm sorry. I'll tell you what's wrong, Simon. The cops should have shot those guys. They pulled the gun out on the second group of police officers that came that were armed, and they wounded the two murderers, and then now they're going to be on trial. And then I guess they arrested 3 other people, and it was I was amazed watching the video, like it was a rap video type. I kept waiting for a movie, you know, brought to you by a Quentin Tarantino film, you know, doing something. It was amazing. But, but it happened, and the bystanders couldn't do anything because they're not armed. They were afraid. People were walking by with a shopping cart, but the poor guy was being hacked to death on the street. I saw that live. And I was amazed. I went to the BBC. And it was just utterly amazing. Utterly amazing that's what happened in broad daylight. And it seems to be because it was a French trooper stabbed in the throat yesterday or today. The same sort of thing. Some Muslim stabbed him in the throat. I guess he's doing okay. I don't know how you do that when you stabbed in the throat. But it seems to be a new terror tactic by the cells out there. So we all have to be on our guard. And we got to either, you know, we got to either look, these people are getting into the countries, and they're doing these sort of things, and just we have to. It's sad, you know, it's almost, I watched it, all I could think about was Kitty Genovese. So we talked about that before, where the person in New York City in the 50s was raped and murdered and killed and brought in New York, and everyone just shut their windows. They shut up. We don't stop screaming. You're bothering us. But that's what happened when I saw that guy being attacked. But then it goes through, that was an immediate response from my head. But the big thing is, we're either going to get out of these wars, or this is going to continue to happen to us randomly all around the world, and that's a scary thought.
Okay, we're flat out of time, so I have to thank you all, but I want to go once around the table. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Any parting thoughts for us?
Yeah, pleasure to be with you, Simon. And real quick, if people want to research something, who sounded the alarm years ago, Enoch Powell. Simon, you might have heard of him, a British member of Parliament. Rivers of Blood speech about 40 years ago. All right, God bless all our veterans. Take care, guys.
Mm-hmm. And Peter, your parting thoughts?
Well, I just want to thank everybody again, and on this Memorial Day weekend, wish everybody the best, and I know that we all hope for peace, but we live in a constant state of war in one form or another, and grateful for everybody who served on the front lines.
And Sam?
Thank you for the opportunity to be with you guys again. Always a pleasure. It's incredible. I really enjoy it. I want to shout out to my dad, who's buried in Arlington, for what he did in World War II. My son Josh, who serves currently in the constant war on terror that's out there, going on a mission. I get all freaked out about it, but nothing I can do. That's what he chose to do, and he's damn good at it. And tomorrow, if you're not doing anything, please go to www.thepetitionsite.com. Audie Murphy Presidential Medal of Freedom Award, and sign a petition so the great, the most decorated hero in World War II, Audie Murphy, also a great actor, can get a Presidential Medal of Freedom. They need, they're looking for online signatures for that. Everybody have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend.
Gentlemen, I really want to thank you for taking time out to talk to me today. I'm sure we'll be back again next week. Until then, I want to wish everyone a happy Memorial Day weekend. And be happy, be healthy, and be safe. Until then, this is Simon Barrett signing off.